Blog Talk Radio.
Honestly, the chance of me getting through all these stories is about 1%. I'm not even going to give you a breakdown. I got to jump right into it. Obviously, well, actually, it's not obvious, but I'll just say it now. The entire show is a debate breakdown. I don't go into it like wanting it to be that, but it just becomes that because, you know, I listen back to the GOP debate, clipped out the parts that I wanted to discuss, and even listen to the other one, the undercard debate, and clipped out some stuff, and the stories just kept piling and piling and piling and piling. So literally every story today is on the debate. So if you don't want a debate breakdown, leave now, because that's what you're going to get. All right, so let's kick it off here with a general breakdown, and then we'll get into some specific clips. So who won the fifth Republican primary debate last night, hosted by CNN? In my mind, it was actually a close one. So naturally, I have Donald Trump winning because he's Donald Trump. So of course, he's won every single debate so far, not only according to the Snap polls, but even according to the scientific polls. He doesn't win by as much in the scientific polls, but he still wins in the scientific polls. So it's almost like every single debate, he has a giant head start to begin with. It's like everybody's running a 100-yard dash, and they just start him 80 yards deep. And they're like, okay, go. And then naturally, he's going to cross the finish line first. So he doesn't need to do much. He just needs to keep being Trump in order to keep winning the debates, and that's exactly what's happening. And naturally, that's a terrifying thought. But yet again, I have him winning despite the outrageous and grotesque things that he said. He, for example, doubled down on his idea to kill civilians in the Middle East on purpose. Stay classy. I do believe you agree with terrorists on that one, and I do believe it's okay to call you a terrorist now, because this is multiple times that you've said, no, I will actively choose to kill the civilians on purpose. Okay, well, that's what terrorists do. So on the substance, obviously, nobody won last night. Well, on the substance, you could say Rand Paul won. But in terms of the overall sentiment and the overall feeling I got from the debate, if I'm trying to judge it through the eyes of your average Republican, I would say Donald Trump won. But then I have close behind him, I go Marco Rubio, who played his role, Mr. Establishment fallback candidate, so that if/when Donald Trump falls off, Marco Rubio is right there to say, I'm the safe one, go with me. Then I actually have, believe it or not, Chris Christie. Now, Chris Christie, yet again, said multiple absurd things, including, hey, let's do World War III with Russia, among other things. At previous debates, he says stuff like, hey, cut Social Security, raise the retirement age, forget Medicare, things that the American people don't like. But when it comes to your average Republican, it's not like they're really well-versed in policy substance and nuance. They're more about feelings and emotions and strength and confidence. So I go Trump, Rubio as the establishment fallback who just held his own yesterday, which is all he needs to do. Then Christie. Then I actually have Rand Paul, because Rand Paul, you know, it was nothing but substance. I mean, he was almost right on everything yesterday, which makes sense because this is a foreign policy debate. And on foreign policy, that's an issue where Rand Paul is, you know, he's a libertarian-ish overall, I should say, but that means on foreign policy, on some social issues, he's pretty liberal. So he made sense. Now, the audience wasn't really digging him all that much, but actually, I'll get to the Snap polls in a second. He didn't do bad when it comes to, you know, what everybody's saying directly after the debate. So the room, I guess, in this case, was not very indicative of what a lot of other people thought. So then I have him, After Paul, I go Cruz, who, again, held his own, even though I can't stand him. He seems so smarmy and fake to me. Then I go Fiorina, who's playing the tough guy, or I guess tough woman role, who, again, on substance, it petrifying. I wouldn't want her anywhere near any position of power, but I think she can, she in some ways rubbed the Republican base the right way. Then I have Jeb, who actually had his best debate yet, but he's Jeb Bush, so, you know, that's not saying much. It's like being the tallest kid in kindergarten. His best debate performance is like Trump on his worst, worst, worst day. Then I go John Kasich, who has continued to be unimpressive since the first debate where he had a home crowd and he looked like he was doing a good job and he looked like a somewhat relevant candidate. Now he appears to be almost wholly irrelevant. And then dead last, I have Carson, who had his moment in the sun, had his 50 minutes of fame, and now he's just dwindling away into nothingness, largely because he doesn't know dick about dick. Not that that ever stops the Republicans from supporting other people who don't know dick. All right, so that's my general takeaway. Now let's get into the snap polls. So Time has theirs up, and according to them, Trump, 49%, a crushing victory. Now, again, caveats on this because we're talking about snap polls. They're unscientific, admittedly so, although they have been, you know, indicative to some extent of what the scientific polls will be like, because in previous debates, the scientific polls kind of backed up what the snap poll said. But Trump, 49%. Then you have Paul at 15%. Paul coming in number two. So, you know, that's good. It's good for people who actually give a shit about policy. Then we have Rubio at 11%. We have Cruz at 8%. We have Bush at 7%, Christie at 3%, Fiorina at 2%, Kasich at 2%, and Carson at 2%. Then we shoot on over to Drudge to see what order they have it in. Trump, number one by a mile and a half again, with about 44%. You have Cruz coming in second with 27%. You have Paul coming in third with 13%. Then Rubio at 8%, Christie at 3%, Fiorina at 2%, Bush at about 2%. Carson at about 2%, and Kasich dead last with about 1%. Then finally, we move over to Slate here. Slate has Trump at 51%, just absolutely positively crushing everybody in sight. You have Rand Paul number two again, so the wider audience, at least in the snap polls, kind of digging Rand Paul making sense on foreign policy. Marco Rubio at 8%, Cruz at 7%, Bush at 4%, Christie at 3%, Fiorina at 1%, Kasich at 1%, Carson at 1%, and then they threw in Hillary and CNN to the mix as well here. Hillary is at 7%, and CNN is at 2%. So there's your overall debate breakdown. My general takeaway is as follows. It's Trump's race to lose. That's a gross thing to think about, and it's fucking horrifying, but he's leading by so much. Not only after the debates and, you know, those specific instances, but also in the national polls and also in a lot of states as well. He's leading by so much that all of the wishful thinking of everybody in the world who doesn't want him to be leading, it doesn't amount to dick. So call it for what it is, but Trump is leading. If he indeed doesn't get the nomination, to me, it appears like at this point you have Marco Rubio and actually Ted Cruz, who are the most likely behind him. And Rubio would be the establishment fallback candidate, you know, the guy who's akin to a Mitt Romney or a John McCain like the last time around. And Ted Cruz is kind of a mix of the super anti-establishment Donald Trump, and not really anti-establishment, but he shows himself like that. Cruz would be a mix of anti-establishment Trump and establishment Rubio. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here on out, but there's your overall breakdown. All right, now, if you can't tell, I'm rushing a little bit here, and the reason I'm rushing is because I have so many fucking stories. So let's go to the first clip. This one is Donald Trump. Don't worry, I didn't weigh us down here with 417 different Trump clips, but we do have, I think, two, three, something like that. So anyway, Donald Trump had a moment at last night's debate that really embodies why he's been so successful. So pay attention to his rant here, but then also listen to Carly Fiorina, who basically walks right into the trap.
Are Americans safer with dictators running the world in the Middle East? In my opinion... In my opinion, we've spent $4 trillion trying to topple various people that, frankly, if they were there and if we could have spent that $4 trillion in the United States to fix our roads, our bridges, and all of the other problems, our airports, and all of the other problems we have, we would have been a lot better off. I can tell you that right now. We have done a tremendous disservice, not only to the Middle East, we've done a tremendous disservice to humanity. The people that have been killed, the people that have been wiped away, and for what? It's not like we had victory. It's a mess. The Middle East is totally destabilized, a total and complete mess. I wish we had the $4 trillion or $5 trillion. I wish it was spent right here in the United States on our schools, hospitals, roads, airports, and everything else that are all falling apart.
That's exactly what President Obama has said. I'm amazed to hear that from a Republican presidential candidate.
God, Carly Fiorina and the rest of them, they have no clue how to play politics. No clue. They're so far up their own ass and deep in that right-wing bubble that they don't know what makes sense to normal people now. So there's two things to take away from that. First of all, what's obvious. So what's obvious is that Trump's over-the-top strength and confidence is one of the main things that propelled him to this point, because he portrays himself as a straight shooter who's anti-establishment. Of course, that's nonsense. He's a billionaire. He is the establishment. But, you know, he portrays himself as anti-establishment, and he's really aggressive in how he talks. So that's one of the main things that has gotten him to this point. But the second thing here, and this is probably the most important, is that he says everything. He says everything. So that means he's going to throw red meat out to the base, like he does at other parts where he basically calls for killing civilians on purpose. He also says later on that we should have stolen the oil from Iraq. I mean, just outrageous, illegal, immoral things. But that's the red meat to the base, so he says that. But then at other times he'll turn around and say, hey, money in politics is the root of all of our problems. We need to stop that. And, oh yeah, we should have spent trillions on infrastructure instead of the Iraq war. So, wait, what? He's saying everything from across the spectrum. So throw the red meat out to the base. Say things that are just flat out left wing, like he said right there with how we should have done infrastructure spending and spent trillions here as opposed to in Iraq. And then at the end of the day, is he contradicting himself on many of these different issues? Fuck yeah, he's contradicting himself. But the reality is the Republican base going to catch on to that? Does the Republican base care about logic and contradictions? No, they're not going to say, Mr. Trump, on September 28th, you said the opposite of what you're saying right now. You know, I don't know which one of you to believe. They just hear what they're hearing right now, and they're like, me like it, me like it. And what Fiorina doesn't understand, which is why she walks right into the trap, is that, Carly, everybody's in favor of taking the trillions that we wasted in Iraq for nothing and rebuilding the country instead. I mean, that's something that, sure, you could say more liberals are in favor of that than conservatives and Republicans. But, you know, when you poll even the far right, they believe things like, keep your government hands off my Medicare. Well, that is the government. So they love certain kinds of government spending. The government spending, that's on them. So here comes Donald Trump who says, I'm conservative, and I want to spend trillions here rebuilding our country, and we should have done the Iraq war. Of course they're going to agree with that. Anybody agrees with that. But she's so deep in that establishment bubble that she's like, ooh, I see an opportunity to do a right-wing talking point here. And she's like, gross, I don't want to spend money on our people and fix the infrastructure. What a Barack Obama-like thing to say. Meanwhile, everybody in the audience, they're already under Trump's hypnosis. And they're like, me like the idea of spending on us. That makes sense. Why? Because it actually does make sense in this instance. Again, he'll contradict himself 800 times, but they don't care about contradictions. They don't care about logic. So he's got confidence, and he's saying everything. If you come out in favor of every single position, and you contradict yourself left and right, but your audience doesn't recognize contradictions, of course you're going to get more support. You're going to get support based off the confidence, because they like that. Strength, I'm attracted to strength. But then also because whatever their pet policy issue is, you hit on it, because you're the only one who's saying the far right shit and the far left shit that they actually like and don't even know that they like. So this is Donald Trump's secret to success, and he's not doing any of it on purpose. So let me be clear about that. Like, it's not like this grand strategy that he came up with behind the scene. He devised it. He's cutting and pasting in a lab. Fuck no. He's just a buffoon who's, you know, he shoots from the hip, so he does contradict himself. And he just it does have this ape-like confidence. So it just ends up working with that base. And Carly Fiorina and the others on stage have no shot against it, it certainly looks like. Okay, next. Now we go to Jeb Bush, who gets fucking pummeled here. Okay. Jeb Bush had a back and forth with Trump yesterday. And here you're going to get a sense of all of his weaknesses and Trump's strengths. So let's watch, and then I'll break it down.
I watched the first debate, and the first long number of questions were, Mr. Trump said this, Mr. Trump said that, Mr. Trump. These poor guys, although I must tell you, Santorum, good guy. Governor Huckabee, good guy. They were very nice, and I respect them greatly. But I thought it was very unfair that virtually the entire early portion of the debate was Trump this, Trump that, in order to get ratings.
Mr. Trump, it's not ordinary.
To get ratings,
Mr. Trump,
I just think it's very unprofessional. Excuse me. I think it's very unprofessional.
But it wasn't CNN. It was me. I watched it last night. For 16 minutes.
I think it's very unprofessional.
It's not CNN. It's America's watching you.
Okay.
Oh. It's America's watching you. I was mentioned so I can bring up something, I think, right? Look, the simple fact is, if you think this is tough and you're not being treated
this
fairly,
isn't tough and
imagine
easy.
What it's going to be like dealing with
Putin, always
or dealing with President
yeah.
Xi, or dealing with the Islamic terrorism that
yeah.
exists. This is a tough business to run for president.
Oh, no, you're a tough guy, Jim.
And we need to have a leader that is for
real tough.
You're never going to be president of the United States
tough,
by insulting your way to
well,
the
let's
president.
See, I'm at 42 and you're at 3, so
doesn't
so
matter.
Far I'm doing better.
Doesn't matter.
So far I'm doing better. You know, you started off over here, Jeff. You're moving over further and further. Pretty soon you're going to be off the end.
This doesn't do a thing.
Oh, he pulverized him. You know, I'm at 46 and you're at 3, so I think I know what I'm doing better than you. Oh. Oh, no. The best was just the nonchalant. Yeah, I know. You're a tough guy, Jeb. I know. Oh, there is a part of me that greatly enjoyed watching that. And notice, oh, God, Jeb is just, he doesn't know how to, like, puff out his chest and speak assertively. And you saw that perfectly when he said, he mentioned my name, so I could talk now, right? Looking for approval and permission from the moderators. Would Trump have ever done that? You know, hey, all right, I'm going to talk now. Is that okay with the moderators? I have to check first before I continue, because I'm a gentleman. No, he'd just talk. He'd be assertive. Oh, the Republican base smells that weakness from a mile away. And there's another part, you didn't see it here, but there's another part where Jeb goes after Trump again, and he actually does a decent job earlier. He does a better job than he did here going after Trump earlier, where he says, look, you're just not serious. You're talking about banning all Muslims and stuff like that. That's crazy. And he explains that it's fairly logical, and he's right, and Trump's wrong. Trump, like, interjects and just runs roughshod over him. And he's like, please, Jeb, save your energy. Because, of course, Jeb is known for being, like, super low energy and damn near asleep like Ben Carson is 24/7. And you just get a sense of Jeb Bush's inherent weakness and Donald Trump's strength. And then, of course, I can't not discuss Trump feigning outrage that they talk about him a lot. He's like, you know, I think it's very unprofessional that all you do is talk about me all the time and it gets my name out there more and then I end up making more money and then everybody knows me. I really don't like that. It's unprofessional. It's excuse me. I love how he says excuse me all the time. Excuse me. And what's his name? Hugh Hewitt, who, by the way, is a conservative radio host. Well done, CNN. Are you going to have Tom Hartman, a liberal radio host, or Mike Malloy, a liberal radio host, come and, you know, question people now? No, you're not going to do that, right? You're only going to go with the conservatives. That's what I thought. But he's like sucking up to Trump. Oh, my God. These guys like him, they're just authoritarian by their nature. These far-right Republicans who just want a leader. Like, oh, my God, please lead me. I'm so scared. I'm in fear. Donald Trump, you seem strong. Lead me. He's like, to be fair, Mr. Trump, to be fair here, it's not just CNN that's doing this. America is watching you. It's the whole country that wants to watch you, Mr. Trump. Don't get mad at CNN for covering you so much. Please, please. Oh, my God, you're all so disgusting. I want to shower after watching that clip. But there you have it. Donald Trump running roughshod over people, being aggressive. The Republican base is going to eat that up. And Jeb Bush, classic Jeb Bush weakness, where he's like, he mentioned my name. I think I could talk now, right? Okay, next. Squeeze in one more, then we'll take our first break. Donald Trump doubled down on authoritarian tactics at the debate yesterday. Here he is talking about the internet.
You recently suggested closing that internet up, those were your words, as a way to stop ISIS from recruiting online. Are you referring to closing down actual portions of the internet? Some say that would put the U.S. in line with China and North Korea.
Well, look, this is so easy to answer. ISIS is recruiting through the Internet. ISIS is using the Internet better than we are using the Internet, and it was our idea. What I wanted to do is I wanted to get our brilliant people from Silicon Valley and other places and figure out a way that ISIS cannot do what they're doing. You talk freedom of speech, you talk freedom of anything you want. I don't want them using our Internet to take our young, impressionable youth and watching the media talking about how they're masterminds. These are masterminds. They shouldn't be using the word mastermind. These are thugs. These are terrible people in ISIS, not masterminds. And we have to change it from every standpoint. But we should be using our brilliant people, our most brilliant minds, to figure a way that ISIS cannot use the Internet. And then on second, we should be able to penetrate the Internet and find out exactly where ISIS is and everything about ISIS. And we can do that if we use our good people.
He's like a child.
So are you open to closing parts of the Internet?
I would certainly be open to closing areas where we are at war with somebody. I sure as hell don't want to let people that want to kill us and kill our nation use our Internet. Yes, sir, I am.
Thank you.
Okay, you literally can't do that. The government doesn't have the authority to do that, and even if they did, you wouldn't want them doing that because it's mission creep. It's a slippery slope, and they will go right down that slippery slope. That's a slippery slope that's so slippery it's got Vaseline and baby oil and all kinds of lotion on it. Because what's going to happen? If you give the government that authority, sure, they'll start by saying, okay, take down the ISIS websites. But then, naturally, you end up with Democrats taking down some right-wing sites that they don't like. You end up with Republicans taking down some left-wing sites that they don't like. You end up with totally getting rid of the First Amendment, and you don't have freedom of freedom of speech. You don't have freedom of expression. You don't live in a free society. You end up living in an authoritarian police state where the government picks and chooses everything that you can and cannot read. I mean, why stop there? Okay, take down ISIS websites. Well, why not ban the Quran? I mean, there are some people in ISIS who, you know, they're quite literally believers in the truest sense of the term. They have a literalist, fundamentalist interpretation of the Quran and the Hadith. So you could say, well, there's the source for these guys, so get rid of that source. And let's continue here. Why not the Anarchist Cookbook or whatever the fuck it's called? Ban that. That never did anybody any good, right? Ban Mein Kampf. Why would anybody want to read, you know, Hitler's book? Unless, what, are you a neo-Nazi? Are you a Nazi in training? You got to get rid of that. Come on now. Ban the Communist Manifesto. Ban Das Kapital. Why? You don't, you have any idea how many people have been slaughtered in the name of communism. There were a lot. There were a lot. So, hey, radicalization might lead to radicalization. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. And then it's only a matter of time. Would you really trust a guy like Trump with that power, man? You really don't think Trump would end up using that in the same way that China uses it or North Korea uses it? Where at the end of the day, it's just anything that Trump dislikes, get rid of that. Anything he likes, keep that up. So official state media. Our media is already shitty enough as it is, with the, you know, inherent incentive structure and how they are biased towards power and the establishment and whatnot. It, you know, if you get Donald Trump in there, he'll put that on steroids and human growth hormone. Okay, he'll make it so that all you get is a picture that's kind to him and his belief system, and everything else is shut down. You don't want the government having that authority. They will abuse that authority. But Trump, in his simple-mindedness, just says, it's about getting ISIS. It's about getting ISIS. And you don't think people in the crowd are going to hear him and go, that's reasonable. I don't know how anybody could disagree with that, man. I don't know how anybody could disagree with that. Believe you me, that's what they're thinking, which is why this is so scary that he's leading by a mile and a half. Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, God, I got so much stuff to get to. We got Chris Christie. We got Carly Fiorina. Later on, we'll get to the undercard stuff. Got Santorum, Lindsey Graham. All interesting clips that I'll never get to, but nonetheless, I will try my best. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Oh.
of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. We're back. All right, now it gets really serious, actually, and you'll see why. Here are two of the most grotesque moments of last night's Republican debate. Ben Carson and Donald Trump were asked in a very straightforward way if they support slaughtering civilians. Here are their answers.
We have a question on this war against ISIS and how you would fight and win this war. Here's the question from Facebook. Listen to this.
I'm Josh Jacob from Georgia Tech. Recently, Donald Trump mentioned that we must kill the families of ISIS members. However, this violates the principle of distinction between civilians and combatants in international law. So my question is, how would intentionally killing innocent civilians set us apart from ISIS?
Mr. Trump, we have to be much tougher. We have to be much stronger than we've been. We have people that know what's going on. You take a look at just the attack in California the other day. There were numerous people, including the mother, that knew what was going on. They saw pipe bombs sitting all over the floor. They saw ammunition all over the place. They knew exactly what was going on. When you had the World Trade Center go, people were put into planes that were friends, family, girlfriends, and they were put into planes, and they were sent back, for the most part, to Saudi Arabia. They knew what was going on. They went home, and they wanted to watch their boyfriends on television. I would be very, very firm with families. And frankly, that will make people think, because they may not care much about their lives, but they do care, believe it or not, about their families' lives.
Donald, we're talking about ruthless things tonight, carpet bombing, toughness, war. And people wonder, could you do that? Could you order airstrikes that would kill innocent children by not the scores, but the hundreds and the thousands? Could you wage war as a commander-in-chief?
Well, interestingly enough, you should see the eyes of some of those children when I say to them, we're going to have to open your head up and take on this tumor. They're not happy about it, believe me. And they don't like me very much at that point. But later on, they love me. Sometimes you... I sound like him. Later on, they really realize what's going on. And by the same token, you have to be able to look at the big picture and understand that it's actually merciful if you go ahead and finish the job rather than death by a thousand clicks.
So you are okay with the death of thousands of innocent children and civilians. It's like...
You got it. You got it.
That is what war... Can you be as ruthless as Churchill was in prosecuting the war against the Nazis?
Ruthless is not necessarily the word I would use, but tough, resolute, understanding what the problems are, and understanding that the job of the President of the United States is to protect the people of this country and to do what is necessary in order to get it done.
Here's how you answer that question. Are you in favor of killing civilians on purpose? No. Next question. That's how any fundamentally decent, moral, ethical human being answers that. Did not do that, they did the opposite. Donald Trump had previously said, I want to target the families, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, mothers, grandmas, kids of ISIS. I want to target the families. I want to bomb the families. He said that before, and then he was asked again here. The question was crystal clear. And he's like, yeah, no. I didn't stutter. I'm doubling down. Ben Carson prodded him a little bit. And again, the specificity of the question, man, that really shows you the kind of people you're dealing with here. Because Hugh Hewitt said, not by the scores, by the hundreds, by the thousands, could you order the carpet bombing of innocent kids? You know, it's better to do something fast and quick than death by a thousand pinpricks or whatever the fuck he said. Okay. When I saw this, I was legit embarrassed for my country. That was absolutely grotesque and shameful. For those of you who don't know, terrorism is defined as violence against civilians for political or religious reasons. I do believe that killing civilians for a political reason to, you know, go after ISIS and defeat the enemy, even though you just said kill the innocent people, not ISIS. So violence against civilians for a political reason, I do believe that fits the definition of terrorism. We have establishment Republican candidates, leaders in the Republican Party, standing on stage advocating for terrorism, and you get thunderous applause from the cretins in the audience. It reminds me of that Star Wars scene. So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. No, guys, actions are moral or immoral. Nobody's the good guy by definition. If you already decide I'm the good guy no matter what I do, well, then isn't that fucking convenient? You get to do whatever you want. You get to kill people, rape people, whatever, and then you get to say, well, I'm still the good guy because I've already decided beforehand that I'm the good guy. No, I don't give a fuck what you've defined yourself as or what you call yourself. That's sloppy labeling. The way to accurately label somebody is to say your actions define who you are. So if you are the one who says, I am actively going to kill civilians, I'm doing it on purpose, I want to kill the civilians, well, then you're a morally abhorrent and you are a bad guy. You agree with ISIS. You're not the opposite of ISIS. That's one of the things ISIS believes in wholeheartedly. What's supposed to separate us from ISIS is that they want to kill civilians and we're supposed to not want to kill civilians. But here you have in the Republican Party, they say, no, I will do that. I will purposefully kill civilians. How grotesque is that, man? How grotesque is that? Because right now, like, so it's one thing to just have legit, you can call it collateral damage. We think we're getting only a top ISIS guy, and then, oh my God, there was an innocent person in a room full of eight ISIS guys, and we got an innocent person. That you can call collateral damage. Then there's another thing if it's, okay, we know we're going to get civilians, but it's to get, like we always talk about with a Taliban operative at a funeral where you know women and children are there, but you attack anyway. So that's not just collateral damage. That's in between massacring, slaughtering civilians and collateral damage. In my view, you're making a totally immoral decision, but still people would say, well, at least he got the Taliban guy. Then you've gone full ISIS if you say, no, I'm going to target women, children, civilians. I'm going to carpet bomb kids. That's what I'm going to do. No, you are a terrorist. You are a bad person. You are immoral. You are unethical. And then furthermore, that's not going to help you fucking win, you idiots. That's counterproductive. There would be such a surge in people joining Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, every jihadist group you can think of. Why? You just gave them fuel to come into places they weren't before and say, aren't those Americans fucking savages? Killing your aunt, your uncle, your grandma, your kid? Now, I know you might not agree with my religious philosophy or my political philosophy, but here's what I can guarantee you. I'll fucking protect you from these bad guys. Here's an AK-47. Let's get to work. And this is why there's been a net increase in terrorists since we started the war on terror. Think about that, man. The whole goal of the war on terror, eliminate terrorists or limit terrorists. The exact opposite happened. There are now more terrorists. There are more terrorists now. So it's just like the drug war. The idea was limit drugs or eliminate drugs. Now there's more drugs in circulation. It hasn't worked. The opposite happened. And one of the main reasons why is we killed so many civilians that you gave the Taliban, you gave jihadists an argument where they say, I'm going to look out for you. I'm going to look out for you. The Americans are against you. I'm here with you. The head of Al-Qaeda came out with a statement the other day saying, if the West keeps attacking in the Middle East, well, I'm calling for a truce. The head of Al-Qaeda said, let's have all the different groups, ISIS, who is their enemy now, let's have all the different jihadist groups, all the mujahideen, come together and we fight against the evil West because we got to defeat them and then we can go back to fighting each other. This is what we're talking about. They don't even get it. They don't get that not only are they immoral and unethical and they're advocating for terrorism, they don't get that it's going to hurt your cause. So in every way, shape, and form, this was a grotesque display. Any fundamentally decent American should be embarrassed at this. This is not our values. This is un-American and wrong. Now let's go to a decent human being and rebound a little bit here. Rand Paul. Poor Rand. Poor Rand. Okay. Rand Paul spent much of the debate yesterday making sense. Here are two examples of it.
Stronger because of the hawks in your party. Do you really think that Republicans have fueled the rise of ISIS?
I think that by arming the allies of ISIS, the Islamic rebels against Assad, that we created a safe space, or made that space bigger for ISIS to grow. I think those who have wanted regime change have made a mistake. When we toppled Gaddafi in Libya, I think that was a mistake. I think ISIS grew stronger, we have a failed state, and we are more at risk. I'd like to also go back to, though, another question, which is Donald Trump a serious candidate? The reason I ask this is, if you're going to close the Internet, realize, America, what that entails. That entails getting rid of the First Amendment, okay? It's no small feat. If you are going to kill the families of terrorists, realize that there's something called the Geneva Convention we're going to have to pull out of. It would defy every norm that is America. So when you ask yourself, whoever you are, that think you're going to support Donald Trump, think, do you believe in the Constitution? Are you going to change the Constitution? So they can kill us, but we can't kill them. That's what you're saying.
You're saying that ISIS grew stronger because of hawks in your party, and do you think that your own party, the people who you're describing, are responsible for the rise of ISIS?
I think that if you believe in regime change, you're mistaken. In 2013, we put 600 tons of weapons, us, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, into the war against Assad. By pushing Assad back, we did create a safe space. We had people coming to our Foreign Relations Committee and saying, oh, we need to arm the allies of Al-Qaeda. They are still saying this. It is a crazy notion. This is the biggest debate we should be having tonight, is regime change a good idea? Has it been a good idea? There are still people, the majority on the stage, they want to topple Assad. And then there'll be chaos, and I think ISIS will then be in charge.
Senator, we're going to talk.
Okay, I have to give a lot of credit to Rand Paul, because in the room, you could tell he didn't have that many supporters, and the people who were his supporters, it might have been a strategy going into it that they were like staffers of his, and they said, okay, you're going to have to make a lot of noise and get really excited when I say something, because the majority of the room is against him. So, but he did it, man. He pulled something that's basically just like his father used to do, where in these Republican debates with far-right base members in the audience, he says stuff like, no, we shouldn't be the world policemen. We've made things worse. This is bad. Let's care about the Constitution. Let's care about the Geneva Conventions. Let's do all these things. And, you know, it's you're swimming against the tide here, and it's a difficult thing. And he did it. And by the way, the room, turns out, was not very indicative of what people said in the snap polls directly after the debate. Rand Paul came in second in many of the polls. Now, at this point, is that enough for him, you know, to get a bump to then have a run at it and have a shot at the nomination? It may be too little too late for that. You know, I kind of wish Rand Paul was like this from day one, and then maybe he would have a better shot. I don't think he'd be leading, but maybe he'd be in the top four or so if that was the case. But either way, he did the right thing here. And on every point, it's almost like everything he said yesterday made sense, because this is him on foreign policy. And, you know, libertarians, or in Rand's case, the person who's libertarian-ish, they're usually pretty good on foreign policy. So it was like watching an episode of The Twilight Zone there. One guy making sense, the rest of them children that don't know anything, and they're getting louder applause. He said, don't arm the allies of ISIS. How about that? And that seems like such common sense. Everybody's like, duh. But virtually everybody on stage disagrees. Virtually everybody on stage is like, yeah, give weapons to the Sunni Syrian rebels. The ones who, by the way, CENTCOM just admitted, we armed some and trained some the second they got into Syria. They turned all of their weapons over to al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria. So when Rand says it, he's saying it because we have been arming and training the allies of ISIS, And we know the results, but everybody on stage is still like, no, let's keep doing that anyway. He said, intervening in Libya, bad. It turned out that was bad. Whether or not you like Gaddafi is irrelevant. It's not defending Gaddafi to say the U.S. should not have gotten involved over there. He's right about that. Killing civilians, bad. Geneva Conventions, good. Constitution, good. And then you have classic Trump there throwing it out there. So they can kill us, but we can't kill them, is what you're saying. Actually, no, that's not what he said. You just said that. And Rand Paul, just like everybody else, when there's a terrorist attack and we know exactly who did it, of course we want to get those people. But the problem is, Don, you repeatedly advocated for killing civilians on purpose. That's not the people who attacked you. They are, by definition, not the people who attacked you. They're innocent civilians, and you say kill them anyway. But see, that's the thing in Donald Trump's mind, guilty enough. Close enough, whatever. You're ISIS or you're somebody who lives in the same place as ISIS, but you're not ISIS and you're innocent. Don't care. If they attack us, we're going to attack all of you. That's stupid, that's immoral, that's counterproductive, and Rand Paul was the only one yesterday pointing it out. Okay, next. Let's go to Chris Christie here. I told you I'd have to be cruising, man. I'm still super behind, even though I've been going pretty much as fast as I can. Chris Christie was asked a very direct question about military action against Russia, and he gave a horrifying answer.
Governor Christie, if the U.S. imposed a no-fly zone over Syria and a Russian plane encroached, invaded that no-fly zone, would you be prepared to shoot down that Russian plane and risk war with Russia?
Not only are we prepared to do it, I would do it. A no-fly zone means a no-fly zone. Well, that's what it means.
See, maybe
because I'm from New Jersey, I just have this kind of plain language hang up. But I would make very clear, I would not talk to Vladimir Putin. In fact, I would talk to Vladimir Putin a lot. I would say to him, listen, Mr. President, there's no-fly zone in Syria. You fly in, it applies to you. And yes, we would shoot down the planes of Russian pilots if, in fact, they were stupid enough to think that this president was the same feckless weakling that the president we have in the Oval Office is right now.
These guys are unbelievable. What he calls a feckless weakling, I call intelligence. I call common sense. Do you understand what he just advocated for? He said, let's do a no-fly zone in Syria, and if a Russian plane goes into the no-fly zone, I would shoot down that Russian plane. Let me pose a very basic question to Chris Christie and anybody else who believes in this policy. Why? Why would you want to shoot down a Russian plane in Syria? Why would you want to do that? Because Vladimir Putin bad. Me no like Vladimir Putin. Okay, smart guy, give me more details. Why would you want to shoot down a Russian plane over Syria? Why would you want to do it? The only thing, when you get to the core of it, all it comes down to is schoolyard bullying, geopolitics, the Cold War mentality. We against Russia. We against Russia and Iran. They no do then nothing we don't like. Don't fly plane. We shoot it down. Because who is Russia or who is Putin mostly bombing in Syria? Who are they bombing? Who are they going after? So they're allies with Assad. That's their buddy, right? Some of the biggest rebel forces in Syria, al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, and ISIS. So you're going to shoot down a Russian plane and escalate to World War III because Russia is mostly targeting jihadists in Syria. So you're going to escalate to World War III to defend jihadists, Chris Christie. That's it. I mean, this group of politicians on the stage, this party, the far right wing of this party, they're a joke. They don't know anything about world affairs. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're advocating for. They're like children. They're bullies. And they would blunder us in to World War III. And I think the most important point is, guys, I don't want young men and women from Nebraska and Kentucky and New York and Hawaii and everywhere in the U.S., I don't want you to die to determine the fate of Damascus or Raqqa that honestly doesn't have anything to do with us. Like, I get it. Do I want to get ISIS? Of course I do. It's how you go about getting ISIS. But here Chris Christie's saying, we will shoot down a Russian plane if they're bombing ISIS. That's who they're fighting in Syria. So possibly do World War III, escalate to World War III with Russia, because we don't like that Putin is bombing ISIS. It's unbelievable. And you can't help but bring up the fact that he throws in there, you know, I'm from New Jersey. I have this plain language hang-up, you know. I'm such a straight shooter, man. I'm such a straight shooter. No, the policy you just argued for doesn't make you a straight shooter. It makes you stupid. Okay, let me give you one more Chris Christie, and then we'll take our final break, and then I'll still have 8 trillion stories to get to when we come back. I have no idea how I'm going to get all these up on YouTube later. Nunzo. Chris Christie spoke a little bit about the Middle East, and he proves that he doesn't know anything about it.
Is he right? Because if we step back, Iran goes nuclear. Is Donald Trump right? Well, I think we have to focus you on exactly what the priorities are. And to me, what I've always said is that the president has set up an awful situation through his deal with Iran. Because what his deal with Iran has done is empowered them and enriched them. And that's the way ISIS has been created and formed here. ISIS is created and formed because of the abuse that Assad and his Iranian sponsors have rained down on the Sunnis in Syria. And so when we empower Iran, this is why this president, and when Hillary Clinton says her theory against ISIS will be just about the same as the president, then get ready for more unrest and more murder and more violence in the Middle East. We need to focus our attention on Iran, because if you miss Iran, you're not going to get ISIS. The two are inextricably connected because one causes the other.
You know, people say liberals don't understand the problem of jihadism and Islamism and the ideological issue in the Middle East. No, no. Chris Christie doesn't understand it. All the jackasses on stage yesterday, except Rand Paul, don't understand it. He just blamed Iran for ISIS. Everybody should be like, okay, that makes less than no sense. Iran is literally the biggest enemy of ISIS. They're Shia, ISIS is radical Sunni, and then he also blamed Assad for ISIS. Assad is fighting ISIS. The Shia militias are the biggest anti-ISIS force in the region. And the creation and the success of ISIS to this point, it all came out of Iraq after the neocons, George W. Bush, toppled Saddam, de-bathified the government, and then all those pissed-off Baathists who are secular socialists, they were like, okay, we're going to team up with the crazy religious lunatics because they're Sunni, and then we can beat back against the Shia repression, and then we'll get into power again. And then also, let's not forget, we left weapons behind in Iraq, where ISIS came in and just said, thank you, I will now be taking that and using it. So our fuck-ups in Iraq led to the increase and the popularity of ISIS. And then he's sitting there saying, fucking Iran. Let's blame Iran for ISIS. Even though Iran is Shia, they're fighting ISIS. And ISIS wants to wipe Iran off the map and get rid of all the Shia before they even think about the Westerners. And then isn't that fucking convenient also? We're having a conversation about Salafism. We're having a conversation about ISIS. And Chris Christie conveniently leaves out Saudi Arabia. Isn't that just cute? Isn't that just peachy? Chris, this is what I mean when I say you don't know anything about the Middle East. This is the guy who advocated for escalating to World War III because Russia is involved in Syria, and Russia is mostly bombing ISIS in Syria. Yeah, let's go to war with Russia over that, because you want to de facto protect the jihadists who are trying to overthrow Assad. But Chris, you're the one who, if we take your advice and we use your policy proposals, you'll actually make it worse, because your job is, no, let's not do anything with Iran, and let's try to beat ISIS. How? With the mythical moderate Sunnis that we've been relying on to this point where nothing's happened? And we know what happened when we armed them. They turned the weapons over to al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda affiliate. So he doesn't know what he's talking about, and it's clear right here. And then even the thing about Obama, just last thing real fast. The thing about Obama, he said, the deal with Iran was horrible. Why? Why? The only reason he says that is because it pissed off Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia is a bigger problem than Iran. Do you not understand that? And the deal stopped the creation of nukes. It didn't put it on the fast track like the shit he makes up there. These guys are just confused and useless on these issues. All right. Let me take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to get into Jesus. Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham. I got a John Kasich one here. I apologize in advance for even mentioning John Kasich. And forget it. I mean, I tried to whittle down the show, but I couldn't because all these stories were too good. Stay right there. Just come right back. Guys, welcome back. All right, I need you to understand that I have, get this, all the stories we've done so far, we've done 8 so far. I have 8 left. That was only half of the shit I prepared. Good googly moogly. Like I said, I won't get this in, but I'm going to try. All right, where's my Carly Fiorina clip? Carly Fiorina had multiple embarrassing moments last night, so let's look at the one where she endorsed a crazy person, and also played the I have a vagina card.
Ms. Fiorina, The former Defense Secretary Bob Gates says the chances of getting Sunni Arab forces on the ground to get the job done, his words, chances very remote. What's your strategy?
Well, first I'll just point out that talking tough is not the same as being strong. And to wage war, we need a commander-in-chief who has made tough calls in tough times and stood up to be held accountable over and over, not first-term senators who never made an executive decision in their life. One of the things I would immediately do, in addition to defeating them here at home, is bring back the warrior class, Petraeus, McChrystal, Mattis, Keene, Flynn. Every single one of these generals I know, every one was retired early because they told President Obama things that he didn't want to hear. We must have Sunni Arabs involved in this coalition. We must commit leadership, strength, support, and resolve. I'll just add that Margaret Thatcher once said, if you want something talked about, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman.
Thank you.
Yes, if you want something done, ask a woman, except answer a very straightforward question in a debate. Notice there was no answer there. He asked about Sunni forces. She's like, you know, let me list off the names of generals that I know. How you like them apples? And also there's an irony in saying, you got to ask a woman if you want to get it done. She says that directly after she names like six male generals. You get a little contradiction there. But either way, you see the card she played. We saw Hillary play this against Bernie the last time around. I am a woman. Vote for me. I said I'm a woman. I have a vagina. I don't have a penis. Have I mentioned I'm a woman? Vote for me. No, I care about your fucking policies, Carly. That's what I give a shit about. I don't care about your genitals. That doesn't factor in when I'm making a decision who to vote for. But the more important part of that is she just called for bringing back General Petraeus. Petraeus gave away top secret information to his mistress because she diddles his weenus. This is the guy you want to bring back? Tell me more about that, and tell me more about how bad Edward Snowden is. Edward Snowden gave away classified information! Put him in jail forever! Hire Petraeus again? But wait, he did the same thing. He did the same thing. Actually, and obviously it's worse what Petraeus did, because in the case of Snowden, him and Greenwald, they went through everything with a fine-tooth comb and said, only release that which it is unconstitutional for the government to say is classified or top secret. Only release the information that the American people have a right to know that the government is illegally hiding from them. Whereas Petraeus, he just gave away top secret information. She's like, bring that guy back. But it actually gets worse than that. She mentioned there, Obama got rid of these people because they told him things he didn't like. Care to go into more deets there, Carly? Why don't you get more specific? I don't know why you're not getting more specific. Here, I'll get more specific for you. One of the reasons Petraeus was let go, he advocated arming Al-Qaeda in Syria. Not only would I fire that guy, I'd probably fire him, hire him back so I could fire him again, and then do that like 83 more times. You're hired, you're fired. You're hired, you're fired. Have I fired you enough yet? What time is it? I have a quota of like 28 times per day I have to fire Petraeus because you're so fucking stupid. You advocated arming the people who attacked us on 9/11. Biggest terrorist attack on U.S. soil. Okay, no, you're done. You're done. You're done. Why? Because he's a clown. He's a child. These are people who see the world not through the eyes of, you know, humanitarianism and altruism, but through the geopolitical imperialist lens where they say, okay, we got to get rid of Assad because Assad is backed by Russia and Iran, and we're not good with Russia and Iran. So if that means maybe arming some Islamists and jihadists to topple him, well, whatever, bro. Arm Al-Qaeda, bro. Did I say arm Al-Qaeda? I didn't mean arm Al-Qaeda. And then Obama's like, what the fuck did you just say? And Obama's bad in his own right. Let's not get it twisted here. Too many interventions, also armed creepy people who were affiliated with al-Nusra and gave them weapons. But Petraeus is the worst of the worst. And Carly Fiorina's like, bring back the guy that wants to arm Al-Qaeda. He's a smart guy. I'm sure he'll do the job well. No, he won't. And neither would you. See, if only we had fact-checkers at this debate, like moderators who can push back on their bullshit, then maybe we wouldn't have this constant stream of stupidity flowing out. Oh, that's right, we do have moderators, and they didn't fact-check it. Wonderful, wonderful. All right, let's go to John Kasich, also known as Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. John Kasich gave a backhanded slap to the historic climate change deal when discussing ISIS.
First of all, Wolf, I said last February that we needed to have people on the ground, troops on the ground, in a coalition similar to what we had in the first Gulf War. I remember when the Egyptian ambassador to the United States stood in the Rose Garden and pledged Arab commitment to removing Saddam Hussein from Kuwait. Before we came out here tonight, I am told the Saudis have organized 34 countries who want to join in the battle against terrorism. First and foremost, we need to go and destroy ISIS, and we need to do this with our Arab friends and our friends in Europe. And when I see they have a climate conference over in Paris, they should have been talking about destroying ISIS because they are involved in virtually every country, you know, across this world. Now,
okay, they're not. ISIS is not in every country across this world. How many are in the ISIS sect in Fiji? I missed that one. So actually something he said is like an offhanded comment that he doesn't realize that we can do this crazy thing called fact-checking. It's in! They're in every country! Did I say that? But also, look at what he's saying. He's mocking the climate change conference because ISIS exists. Yeah, you know, there are a variety of things in the world. There are different issues. And, like, we can talk about all of them at different times. What do you want to do? How dare you talk about the minimum wage? ISIS exists. What's wrong with you? Okay, yeah, we can talk about the minimum wage. We can talk about unionization. We can talk about money in politics. We can talk about war. We can talk about ISIS. We can talk about 814 things. We can talk about science and climate change. He's like, no! There was a global meeting and they only talked about climate change. Motherfucker! What about ISIS? What about them? We'll get to that conversation. Believe me, they got some policies happening. Obama's dropped roughly 87 quadrillion bombs on them. Yeah, I don't see you giving credit to him for that, even though that's something that you allude to that you like. And it's just, they're so unserious. I mean, every scientist in the world, every credible, I should say, because we know that some were paid to say the wrong things, but every credible, reputable climate scientist is like, yeah, no, this is a problem, and if we don't do something about it, humanity is, what's that word I'm looking for? Fucked. We're fucked. So, hey, let's get our shit together. Let's try to avoid drought, famine, an increase, a fucking up of the food chain and an increase in food prices and stuff like that, rising sea levels where you lose Miami and you lose places all around the world, wars over natural resources, a shift in the climate patterns that makes it so that, you know, we've never seen natural disasters of, you know, this magnitude, so on and so forth. He's like, all of that, no, ISIS. Very serious guy we're dealing with here. Okay, now, Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was asked about immigration last night, and he went into classic politician mode.
You co-authored a bill with Democrats 2 years ago that allowed a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Do you still support that path to citizenship, which means giving those immigrants rights, like the right to vote?
Yeah. Immigration is not an issue that I read about in the newspaper or watch a documentary on PBS or CNN. It's an issue I've lived around my whole life. My family are immigrants. My wife's family are immigrants. All of my neighbors are immigrants. I see every aspect of this problem, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And here's what we learned in 2013. The American people don't trust the federal government to enforce our immigration laws. And we will not be able to do anything on immigration until we first prove to the American people that illegal immigration is under control.
And we can do that. We know what it takes to do that. It takes at least 20,000 more additional border agents. It takes completing those 700 miles of fencing. It takes a mandatory e-verify system and a mandatory entry-exit tracking system to prevent visa overstays. After we've done that, the second thing we have to do is reform and modernize the legal immigration system. And after we've done those two things, I think the American people are going to be very reasonable. But what do you do with someone who's been in this country for 10 or 12 years, who hasn't otherwise violated our laws because if they're a criminal, they can't stay? They'll have to undergo a background check, pay a fine, start paying taxes, and ultimately they'll be given a work permit, and that's all they're going to be allowed to have for at least 10 years. But you can't even get to that third step until you've done the other two things. And that was the lesson we learned in 2013. There is no trust that the federal government will enforce the law. They will not support you until they see it done first.
Senator, you haven't answered the question.
Oh, I love the way that ended. Do you support a path to citizenship? He's like, yeah, word salad. Throw the word salad at you. Words, things, stuff. Stuff. And then there, Senator, you haven't answered the question. Not many people know this story, but everybody should know this story because this tells you Marco Rubio's true colors more than anything else, okay? People don't know that Rubio literally proposed an immigration bill, and then when he got pressure from the far right on the fact that he proposed an immigration bill, he came out against his own bill. Oh, that's so gross and sad. Oh my God, you are the least principled politician in human history. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's like, political winds, where are you blowing? Please tell me. I need to react accordingly to try to be a smarmy politician and save my career, even though it's so transparent to anybody who's paying attention. He also did the whole Sheldon Adelson, like, you know, oh my God, I'm so against gambling. It's so immoral. Ban internet gambling. Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio were proposed stuff like that. Meanwhile, of course, Sheldon Adelson made all of his money from casinos. He made his money from gambling. He's like, it's immoral. Ban it. But just ban it for them, not for me. Oh, I see what's happening. You're just trying to cut off your competition so you can make all the money. And these jackass politicians are your bitches. They're puppets. So they're pretending to be all, you know, morally outraged when they're just doing your bidding for you. So that's all you need to know about Marco Rubio. He proposes an immigration bill, and then he comes out against his own immigration bill. That's so sad. And can we just, I know, crazy, but let's just introduce facts into the conversation here. There are more Mexicans leaving than coming in America. There's a study we just covered. If I'm not mistaken, the number was about 840,000. There's been a net loss of 840,000 recently. So this idea of like, oh man, everybody's trying to get in here. It's so great here. Nobody's leaving. Okay, that's just not true. And furthermore, they always hide behind border security. Once we get border security right, then we can have a conversation about a path to citizenship. Maybe. The reality is every proposal from the Democrats increased border security. I mean, there were proposals that cut the deficit, increased border security, had drones on the border in Texas. The Democrats give in to the demands of the Republicans because they say that's the only way we're going to do a comprehensive deal is if we have more border security and all these things. The Democrats say, fine, we're giving you all those things. And then the Republicans go, we don't want to do the deal. You just said you'd do the deal, though. No, we don't want to do it. Border security. But we said we'll do border security. We don't want to do a deal. This is the Republican Party. It's nothing but an endless parade of idiots and clowns. Okay, next. Ted Cruz. Oh, boy. Ted Cruz had yet another whiny and annoying moment at this debate where he clashed with the moderators. Let's watch.
Thank you. Out of the chaos.
Thank you, Senator. The question of whether we should be toppling dictatorship is asking the wrong question. We should be defeating our enemies. So the problem
Senator, we're going to get to you. Wait your turn. We have 2 hours debate. We'll have plenty of time. Let Hugh ask his question.
Well, but let me explain. The focus
Senator,
should
please,
be on defeating
please.
Our enemies. So, for example,
Senator,
the regime
you'll
we
have
should
plenty
change
of opportunity.
Is
Go
Iran,
ahead.
Because Iran
Go ahead, Hugh.
Has declared war on us. But we shouldn't be toppling
Senator,
regimes that are fighting radical Islamic terrorists and that are helping.
These are the rules all of you agree to. Hugh, go ahead with your question.
Mr. Chung.
Dude, Wolf Blitzer, shut your ass down. Oh, that's sad. You even heard people in the audience there after a while, because he, I'm Ted Cruz, whiny voice, me, thing, stuff, Iran is bad. Even the audience was like, boo, 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 boo. Okay, Ted Cruz is profoundly unlikable. I don't know, I mean, at this point, it's amazing that he's, in some polls, number two, in most polls, number three, behind Trump and Rubio, overall, nationally. And in some places, in Iowa, he's leading now by a lot over Trump. That, I'm just flabbergasted. Who can look at that guy and say, my kind of guy, a fake, smug, smarmy, whiny prick who it's all an act. He's just a sleazy politician through and through. And we're just covering this, you know, segment for shits and giggles because it's funny that he clashed with Wolf Blitzer and Wolf was like, zip, www.zipit.com, www.shh.com. So it's just funny to talk about it. But on policy, he's also absurd. I mean, he's like the right-wing radio host listener candidate of choice. So there's just another example of Ted Cruz. I don't know why, but everything the guy does just irks me. And I'm willing to admit my bias up front. It's not just that I hate his policies, which I do. I also just can't stand his persona and his cheesy acting. Okay, next. Rick Santorum. So we're to the undercard debate, man. We're making moves here. I got four left. There's no way I'm squeezing it in, but we'll try. Rick Santorum is going to defend Donald Trump's Muslim ban at the undercard debate last night. Let's watch.
You've made religious liberty a hallmark of your career. Do you believe in religious liberty for Muslims as well as Christians?
Of course I do. But what Donald Trump was saying was nothing against Muslims. His comment was against this administration who doesn't have a policy to properly vet people coming into this country. Let's just be honest about what's being talked about here. And I know people will pile on because it makes sense to pile on, maybe from the polls. But he brings up a legitimate issue. The fact of the matter is, not all Muslims are jihadists, and no one, including I suspect Donald Trump, would say that. But the reality is, all jihadists are Muslims. That's a reality. And we have to stop worrying about offending some people and start defending all Americans, because we're not right now.
All right, there's so many parts of that I adore. First of all, he says, what Trump was saying was nothing against Muslims. He advocated for a ban on all Muslims from entering the United States of America. That is, by definition, targeting Muslims. And it's not just targeting some Muslims. It's not targeting jihadists. It's not targeting Islamists. He's saying all Muslims, keep them out. And Rick Santorum goes out there and says, what Trump was saying was nothing against Muslims. Okay, that is like, that should be in the dictionary under contradiction. How do you not see that? Does your brain just not have a logic level or a meter or a setting? Can you're not perceptive. Apparently you don't get it. It's so obvious, it's so out there. But, you know, mental gymnastics, I guess, to bend over backwards to be kind to Trump. Who knows? Maybe Rick Santorum is trying to jockey for position to be VP or be somewhere in the cabinet or something like that. And then he says, well, I mean, look, he's got legitimate concerns talking about Trump. No, he doesn't. Because, you know, the problem is we don't have vetting for the refugees. That's the problem. Except that is absolutely not true. Not only do we have good vetting, I would say it's probably the best vetting in the world. We went through the process on the show before. I gave you all the details of it. You know, there's multiple steps, multiple government agencies are involved. There's an interview with the Department of Homeland Security. You dig into their background. Sometimes it takes people between a year and 3 years to get here. There's biometric screening, everything you can think of. So much so that I'm comfortable with saying let more refugees in here because it's the right thing to do as long as you're helping people who actually need the help and they're not radical Islamists or anything. It's the right thing to do, and we can be relatively certain based on our great vetting that we're going to bring in the right people. But he just brushes that all aside. Either he's ignorant, so he doesn't know the facts on it, or he knows and he's just lying. But that's, you know, you're just wrong. Plain and simple, you're just wrong, Rick. And then, of course, the great line, you know, not all Muslims are jihadists, but all jihadists are Muslim. That's true. Ooh, you got us! Ooh, you got us, tough guy! But I love how, that leads to the logical conclusion of ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. No, that doesn't lead to that conclusion. That conclusion is nowhere near the point you made. But, you know, think about that point in almost any other context. So why can't somebody say, not all white boys are mass shooters, but the overwhelming majority of mass shooters are white boys, therefore, don't allow in any white boys who are refugees or immigrants or anything. From Europe, you're done. You're done. Australia, sorry. You're done. Why? Hey, not all white boys are mass shooters, but most mass shooters are white boys, so it's a risk here. 32,000 people die from gun violence in the U.S. every year. I guess we should keep out all white boys. That's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. But funny how he tries to use that logic on Muslims, totally cool, on white boys, oh my God, discriminatory. I do believe it'd be discriminatory in both cases. All right, next. I got to pick here because maybe I could squeeze in two more. I just got to pick the right ones. Okay. I think I know which ones I'm going with. Whew, start with Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee is going to lay out far-right Republican philosophy here in a nutshell. Let's listen.
I think we make a mistake when we start telling the enemy what our limitations are. I think we make a huge mistake when we say we're going to do up to this. I think what we say is we're going to do whatever it takes. If it's 10,000, if it's 100,000, if it's 3,000 sorties a day, if it's 5,000 sorties a day, we never tell our enemy what our limitations are, what we're willing and what we're unwilling to do. And that's one of the mistakes I believe that we're making militarily. But the biggest mistake we've made militarily is letting Barack Obama cut our defense forces by 25% and leaving us at the least prepared position we've been in since before World War II. We have to get our military rebuilt from the ground up. And all over America, I hear young people say, would you tell me what you're going to do? Would you give me free college? Would you make sure that I can have medical marijuana? You know what I think we ought to tell young people? We aren't going to give you anything. We're going to give you the opportunity to get off your butt and go serve your country and secure your freedom, because if you don't, nobody else is.
Okay, that is absolutely precious. So there you go, guys. If that's what you want out of your government, which is supposed to represent you, by all means, vote for Mike Huckabee, vote for the Republican Party, vote for far-right candidates in the Republican Party. They're telling you exactly what they'll do. They'll say, shut up. Don't tell me what you want the government to do for you in terms of what your tax dollars go towards, the money that you pay. Fuck that. Let me tell you, shut up, put on a uniform, and go fight in Syria. Go fight in Iraq. but wait a second, why would we do that when, as we've gone over 100 times, and everybody admits, well, we don't like both sides in Syria. We don't like Assad, vicious dictator, kill civilians, horrible guy. But on the rebel side now, it's mostly Islamists and jihadists, including ISIS and al-Nusra. Why again do you want poor women and men from Nebraska and Wyoming to go fight over there? Please explain that. How does that make you more moral? No, that makes you less moral. That you're using our brave young men and women as pawns in a geopolitical chess match against Russia and Iran. That's really what's happening here. So spare me your nonsense, but notice the main point is, he says, it's this philosophy of, yeah, you pay your taxes to the government, but shut up. We're not going to give you anything. You know, don't ask for stuff for your money. Shut up. You're paying me to appease me, the government, and I will dictate to you to go fight in wars that we shouldn't be involved in the first place. Well, Mike, I'm not paying the government to appease it. If I'm paying taxes and I say, hey, prioritize college, put my money towards college, you're supposed to represent me in a democracy and do what I want because I paid the fucking taxes. To not do what I want, you would be robbing from me. Okay, so we're just asking for rational priorities, and we are paying for our government, so we get to choose if we want college or healthcare or other things. But you want to take our money and do whatever you want with it, not listen to us, and then go send us to die for no goddamn reason overseas. There's your Republican philosophy. The government's not going to represent you. Get over it, and oh, yeah, go fight in wars that we shouldn't be in. And finally, he says, well, you know, the problem is Obama's weakening our military. We're at a weak point now with our military. Oh, is that so? Let's take a look at the chart here. Well, isn't that adorable? The U.S. spends more than the next 14 countries combined on military. Those are the 14 next biggest countries combined in terms of military size. And most of them are our allies. We spend more than all of them. And what does Mike Huckabee say? No money for college. Shut up about that. We need to increase for military spending, even though clearly we don't. And I'm going to make you fight overseas and die, and don't you dare ask me to represent you by doing what most people want, which is legalizing weed, 58%, and doing universal college. Mike, you're wrong, you're not representative, and basically you're all around just a bad dude. Okay, and finally, let me just rip on Lindsey Graham in this last segment real quick. I might go over, but whatevs, bro. Lindsey Graham had a wonderfully creepy reference he dropped yesterday during the debate. Let's watch.
To my good friend Ted Cruz, please ask him the following question. You say you would keep Assad in power. I will tell you that is the worst possible thing that could come out of an American leader's mouth. It would be disastrous. His favorite movie is apparently Princess Bride. Ted, getting in bed with Iran and Russia to save Assad is inconceivable.
Sir Santorum, let me ask you.
Princess Buttercup would not like this.
Sir.
I don't quite know what to say about that. It's like he couldn't help himself. You know, Assad in the Middle East, we're dealing with radical Islamists all over the place. And let me tell you one thing about The Princess Bride. It was a decent movie. Saw it 6 or 7 times. Ted Cruz likes it. Princess Buttercup, quite a character if I don't say so myself. What the fuck are you saying, bro? Dude, stop letting your true colors hang out. Oh, that's the thing that's so sad about this clip. Lindsay's been trying to hide it for years now, for decades now. Him and John McCain give each other back rubs. You know, when nobody's looking, they get a little touchy-touchy and stuff. Here he's like, he's letting it all hang out. Assad, I'm a tough guy. I'm a big guy. The Princess Bride is great. What? Ooh, did I let that slip? I didn't mean that. Where's the baby oil? Where's McCain? Oh, God, I can't. Stop talking out loud. No, what he's really referring to is Ted Cruz, in some obscure news story, nobody else really knew about this except me, and I follow the news closer than anybody. In some obscure news story, Ted Cruz was talking about how The Princess Bride was his favorite movie. Lindsay, nobody in the audience knows that. So when you bring up The Princess Bride reference, everybody's like, did this motherfucker say Princess Bride? And Princess Buttercup, look, I don't know anything about Princess Bride. I had to look it up, and I thought Princess Buttercup was another reference. Apparently, I guess Princess Buttercup is in Princess Bride. Dude, you're talking to yourself. So at the end of the day, you're an effeminate dude on stage, randomly bringing up the Princess Bride and Princess Buttercup. It looks like what you don't want it to look like. That's all I'll say. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Mwah. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.